He assaulted most violently one of the victims with the business end of a hammer. He was always very nice and never gave me the creeps. Good evening, Nightmare family. Before we get started, I just wanted to mention that I had the pleasure of sitting in with a pretty normal podcast. We chatted about the podcast and serial killers and horror and all kinds of fun things, so I'd encourage you to check it out. I'll be sure to put a link to the podcast in the description. Be sure to also follow me on social media. Especially with this episode, I will be posting links to articles about the serial killers mentioned. So I'm on Instagram as Nightmare Society Radio. I'm on Twitter as Society_Radio. And I will probably be posting the more in-depth stuff on my Facebook page, and it is Nightmare Society Radio. But please check it out. Don't forget to leave a comment, a like, and subscribe. Now, get comfy and prepare yourself for another episode of
The Nightmare Society.
This didn't happen to me. It happened to my dad when he was 17. It was 1982. He ran away from home because he was in some kind of trouble. He never really told me exactly what he had done, but I knew he had a pretty crazy youth. To escape getting into trouble, he went to London and stayed in a bar near the train station for a few hours trying to figure out what to do next. Very quickly, he was approached by a man who sat next to him and kept buying him drinks. The man was kind, charming, and really seemed to empathize with my dad. He offered to let my dad stay with him for a few days, free of charge. My dad says he really considered it, actually thinking he might go there and steal from the man. But he changed his mind last minute because the man had been kind to him and he went back home. About a year later, he had met my mother and they were watching the news when the same man popped up on the TV having been arrested. He then learned that the man was Dennis Nilsson and was the same man he had been talking to for hours in the pub in London. Apparently, when Nilsson appeared on the TV, my dad turned ghostly white and immediately started shaking. Although it's not my experience, I'm always extremely careful and wary of people I don't know. Dennis Nilsson died in 2018, so luckily, he will never meet anyone again. Back in about 2000 or 2001, I was driving myself from visiting my mom in Colorado back to Arizona. I was in a station wagon and had a desk my mom had given me that was my grandfather's. I've always been scared of driving at night and that there was someone in my back seat that's going to get me. This might be because of too many scary movies or because my mom's paranoia rubbed off on me. I was in the army and drove back and forth a lot to visit her. She would get mad at me for sleeping at rest stops or gas stations and tell me someone was going to kidnap and kill me. But I just didn't want to be bothered with the hassle and expense of a motel most of the time. I digress. So I'm driving an empty stretch of highway late at night with no other cars around. This red truck comes up behind me, flashing his lights and honking his horn at me. I was thinking to myself that there was something wrong with my car, or maybe there was something wrong with the desk in the hatchback. Because why else would he be so insistent on pulling me over? So I pull over. I was in my mid-20s and still a bit naive, and I get out of my car. As I'm getting out of my car, he's directly behind me and still flashing his lights and honking his horn. I got to about the middle of the car. I planned on going to the back to see what could have been wrong with my car, when it hit me. Why is he still honking at me when I'm out of the car? That's odd. Then he gets out of his truck. That's when I knew something just wasn't right. I jumped back in my car and sped off. The next exit was 45 miles away or so. He followed me the entire time. I take the first exit and go to a crowded grocery store with a laundromat next to it. There was an ambulance parked at the laundromat with its lights flashing, and I pulled in next to it. I figured if there is an ambulance, then eventually a police officer should come. The man stayed in his truck in the grocery store parking lot watching me the entire time. I was terrified. I did not want to get out of the car and felt like an idiot if I would have to tell someone what happened. I waited about an hour and he finally left. After he left, I waited a little longer before continuing my drive back to Arizona. I was paranoid and watchful for any red trucks the entire time. Fast forward about 5 or 6 years. I'm watching Unsolved Mysteries or some similar type crime show with my husband at the time. He knew what happened as we were dating when it happened. And what story pops up? One about a man on that exact stretch of highway with a red truck that used those exact tactics to get a few women to pull over, and he murdered them. I really am glad my gut told me something was wrong and to get back in my car and drive. I'm honestly such a grumpy tomboy that I never imagined that I would end up with a would-be stalker, especially not with the career I chose. I was a forensic death investigator. Forensics police officers that generally work with the DA's office and or the medical examiner's office that looks into cases of suspicious death, homicides, suicides, accidents, etc. Occasionally I'd run into people who had a passing interest in what I did because they'd seen CSI or Law and Order a few times. No big deal. Right? Wrong. So very, very wrong. It started with a homicide scene I'd been called to at an ungodly hour in the morning when Mr. Fanboy showed up. He was around his late 30s to early 40s, average height and modestly fit. He was chattering away with one of the poor unis guarding the scene. Not a big deal. It happens because people are curious. But then he whips out a camera and snaps a few pictures. At that point, I figured he was a really nosy, tone-deaf journalist and decided to give him a polite lecture on how inappropriate it was to take pictures of a crime scene. Especially when we were getting ready to move the deceased's body. I deleted the photos and sent him on his way and figured that I'd never see him again. But no. He pops up again a week later at another questionable scene. It doesn't click yet that something is seriously off until a week after that he shows up at another scene. This one being a complete county away from the last one. I worked a major city in Texas through the medical examiner's office, so we took cases from several surrounding counties, a few thousand square miles. So it was odd that this guy would show up to a rather standard scene on the outer edge of our covered area, even if he was press. I mentioned it to some coworkers when I get the chance, and they've noticed him hanging around some of their scenes too. When he showed up again, me and a uniformed officer shake him down to see who the hell he is and why he's got a major hard-on for rubbernecking crime scenes. I'm used to rubberneckers. I get it. People are curious and sometimes a bit morbid when something happened nearby. Once the excitement and newness wears off, they go on about their business. Mr. Fanboy does not have a criminal record, like not even speeding or parking tickets, so my superior had a talk with him. Basically explained that he was making everyone nervous and it looked really shady to start hanging out at crime scenes. So he disappears for a couple of weeks before switching to a new tactic. If he can't hang around the crime scenes, why not hang around the investigators? But of course, only the female ones. Fanboy shows up at one of my favorite dive bars that I frequent because it was near my home, over 30 miles from where I work. Now, I'm a 5'7" woman who doesn't look imposing in the least. My coworkers used to tease that I look like I was a kid playing dress up in my uniform. Like most women, I tried to be polite with the guy who at the time was about 20 years my senior, but declined any offer of a drink. He doesn't take the hints and chats me up with some of the creepiest shit I have ever heard.
What's the worst crime scene you've ever investigated? Have you ever worked on a case where the victim was dismembered? Do you think rape and murder cases are really about power dynamics and not sexually motivated?
So I'm creeped the hell out. Those are things I don't even want to talk with a therapist about, much less a dude who's giving me some seriously rapey, murdery vibes. I completely shut him down, not even trying to be polite, and he seemed a little put off, but not apologetic in the least. I went home. I put my service weapon back on and called my supervisor to give them a heads up and start a paper trail for an RO. He is served with cease and desists a few days later, and I figured that the threat of a restraining order and trouble with the police will deter him from escalating any further. Not even 24 hours after the cease and desist is delivered, he's back to shadowing crime scenes like it's going out of style. At another female investigator's scene, he gets into an altercation with one of the uniformed officers. He gets slammed with trespassing, obstruction, and a few other charges, but since he has no record, he's let out on bail and shows up to a scene I'm working not 3 days later. We get into a scuffle after he breaks one of my guy's noses to get into the scene. He's not as strong as he looks, but I still ended up with a black eye. He looked worse by the time my partner and I finally got him cuffed. An investigation is opened up and turned up a police scanner and a lot of creepy journals in his car, as well as notes on where I lived and worked along with the information on one of the other female investigators. From what I heard through the grapevine, his mother's house where he was living was creepy as hell. Yeah, I never thought people would be that obsessed with crime scenes, forensics, or the like. So much that they'd end up going to jail. But here we are. I'm also very aware that he probably had a lot of very unsavory things planned for me and or one of my coworkers, which still makes my skin crawl to this day. So creepy forensics fanboy, who was probably a Dexter wannabe who watched too much CSI and Bones. If you ever get out of prison, let's not meet again. Back in the mid-90s, while I was living in Colorado, I was dating the son of Deborah Snyder. Deb was the girlfriend of murderer Thomas Luther. This man raped, beat, and murdered several women in West Virginia and Colorado. He assaulted most violently one of the victims with the business end of a hammer. He was always very nice and never gave me the creeps. I wonder if, because I was dating his girlfriend's son, that's why nothing bad ever happened to me. Anyway, once it came out about who he was and what he had done, I was in complete shock. My mom almost had a heart attack thinking that her baby girl was that close to a monster. My boyfriend never had a close relationship with his mom, and this drove them further apart. Deb was always defending Tom, and while admitting he did bad things, she still loved him. Still gives me the chills to this day thinking about it. The funny thing is, over 20 years later, my brother is now a correctional officer at the maximum security prison that Tom is housed at. I work the overnight shift at a Wawa convenience store. And from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. we get all types of people. Normal, obnoxious, drunks, cops, and the occasional construction worker in for their morning coffee. So when yet another customer came in covered in dirt, I figured he was just a hard-working man in a blue-collar job. He had been in before, so we made small talk and he went on his way. That was Friday. I didn't see him on Saturday, but then Sunday he was in again. He got food and a drink, and after the normal, "Hi, how are you?" he went on his way again. Monday comes around and I'm working like normal when a few cops come in for coffee, and you can tell something's wrong.
"We've got a lead on those missing teenagers,"
they said solemnly.
"We're searching a farm down the road."
All of our hearts sank. It had been days since they went missing, so we were slowly losing hope. But this confirmed our worst suspicions. The cops were out there all night. They brought in dogs and eventually found them, 12 feet down and covered in concrete. It was bad. At the scene, they could only identify two of the teens based on their clothing. But there were enough bones to imply that all four of them were down there. Everyone was devastated. Then the cops asked for our security tapes.
"Why?"
we asked, confused.
"We haven't had anyone suspicious."
It was then that they revealed that the killer, a guy named Cosmo DiNardo, had in fact been in our store Friday night, and again on Sunday. The dirt-covered man was a murderer. I was floored, and when I left work, I looked up a picture of the man they arrested. It was him. The man I'd made small talk with and wished a good day. The man covered in dirt. Dirt from the hole he dug to hide the people that he killed. I would really appreciate it if you showed your support for the podcast by liking, commenting, reviewing, sharing, or whatever your current streaming app allows. Don't forget to follow me on social media. It's listed in the description. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, stay safe.